fleet of vehicles to electric. They've made some progress on each of these goals. The group scored an ETIP grant to create a renewable energy strategy, and they want to continue that work this year. They also propose continued collaboration with the city on developing a strategic waste management plan and electrifying the fleet. In other business, the Assembly will discuss drafting a new request for proposals for management of the Performing Arts Center. Alaska Arts Southeast, an arm of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, currently manages the PAC in a cooperative agreement with the city and the school district. Their contract expires in June. According to a memo from city staff, under the previous agreement, Alaska Arts Southeast was not paid by the city, but retained all revenue generated from PAC rentals. They're requesting $125,000 a year moving forward. The Assembly will also consider increasing fees for car rental businesses at the airport from 4 to 8%. In a memo, city staff estimate that this would amount to a small revenue increase of around $150,000, which would go into the airport's enterprise fund. The Sitka Assembly will meet at 5 p.m. for a work session with the Sitka Chamber of Commerce. Raven News will broadcast the regularly meeting when it begins at 6 p.m. following Alaska News Nightly. The Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery opened for a second time over the weekend and again on Monday. In a press release on Friday afternoon, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced the first opening for the fishery this year had lasted an hour from 4 to 5 p.m. in Hayward Strait. They reported that a midday test set in the area showed fish with 10 to 11% mature roe weighing 137 and 149 grams on average. That day, seiners harvested around 340 tons of herring. There was no commercial opener on Saturday, but during aerial surveys, ADF&G observed about a quarter mile of spawn on the eastern side of Cassiana Island. On Sunday, the commercial fishery opened again from 12:30 until 5 p.m. in Hayward Strait and Krestoff Sound. Just over 3 nautical miles of spawn were observed along Cassiana Island and Halibut Point, Neva Strait, DeGroff Bay, and Fred's Creek. Seiners landed a total of 1,900 tons. On Monday, seining opened at 11:30 a.m. and fishing occurred throughout the afternoon in the waters of Hayward Strait and Krestoff Sound. As of press time, no estimate of the day's total had been released. Monday's aerial survey located large concentrations of humpback whales near St. Lazaria Island and in Hayward Strait. Sea lions were concentrated around rock piles near Sitka Point, the Magoon Islands, and to the north in St. John the Baptist Bay. No test sets occurred on Monday. The next aerial survey will be flown Tuesday. The new marine haulout and boatyard at Sitka's Gary Paxton Industrial Park is a year out from completion, although no ground has yet been broken. Board members heard an optimistic update from the municipal engineer last week. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The city received 2 highly competitive bids for the project, according to municipal engineer Michael Harmon. Now the goal is to see how well costs for the winning bidder, Western Marine, align with design estimates. Harmon spoke to the board of the industrial park last week.
So I'm very antsy to get into that step to really feel like we can come back to you with much higher confidence in our overall approach. I'm still very confident in it, but I like to hear that from the contractor.
Sitka has just over $9 million in hand for the project from the sale of the former Sitka Community Hospital building and a $1 million grant from the Denali Commission. This amount will buy a very basic facility, including a travel lift and washdown pads, but it will take roughly $6 million more to add features like an expanded boatyard, restrooms, and office space. With such a tight budget, rising costs are a worry. Harmon told the board that bringing in a contractor at the design stage, technically called a construction manager at risk, means that the CMAR will bear significant responsibility for holding the line on expenses.
These contracts are set up so the construction's on actual cost. They have to prove up on their actual cost, all their receipts, their time, their labor, and then they get their markup on top of that. And then the third component that we locked in, and Sitka's kind of unique in this because we're trying to lock in as much as we can on these up front, is we listed out a whole bunch of general conditions like mobilizing your equipment here, getting office space for your crew. We had a whole list of general conditions that they locked in now, and they cannot change that either.
Harmon said the variables at this point boil down to materials and subcontractors. A consistent concern of the Industrial Park Board is the absence of electrical service to the boatyard work areas, With no wiggle room in the main funding package, Park Director Gary White said he's looking at doing it as a side project.
We've heard from this board that that's an important thing, and we really want to figure out how we can separate this project from that project, because if we end up going for something that's going to fit the waterfront, that could tie in NEPA and all kinds of other federal environmental stuff that would potentially drag out the waterfront development.
NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires an environmental assessment of federally funded projects. Consequently, White sought the board's approval to apply for non-federal funding to pay for electrical service. Actual construction of the boatyard and haulout is scheduled to begin this coming October, with final completion in March 2025. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska author Lily Tzroyluk was recognized as one of USA Today's Women of the Year earlier this month. Past awardees include Kamala Harris, Goldie Hawn, and Quanah Chasing Horse. The award honors women who are using their voices for change. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen talked to the author about her book and what's next.
Lily Tzroyluk says she was stunned when she heard the news. USA Today's Woman of the Year is awarded to around 60 women nationally every year, with one selected from each state. Tzroyluk was Alaska's awardee.
It was a great surprise and a great honor, and I thank my people for bringing me this far.
Tzroyluk is Inupiaq, Tlingit, and Nisga'a, a First Nations people in present-day British Columbia. The 46-year-old author's debut work, Sivulik Ancestor, published in 2022, is a historical fiction novel set during the commercial whaling boom of the late 1800s.
It's a story of survival and making a trek across Arctic Alaska up into Arctic Canada, Herschel Islands. The theme of it is a mother's love and cultural knowledge.
The year is 1893, and smallpox has decimated Indigenous communities in Northwest Alaska. And in the middle of that devastation, an Inupiaq mother is attacked by white men. When she regains consciousness, she learns her young daughter has been kidnapped by a whaling captain from New England. In pursuit of the kidnappers, she travels hundreds of miles through brutal Arctic storms while simultaneously witnessing the effects of colonization and sickness along the way.
I wanted to show resilience and survival of what an Indigenous mother, an Inupiaq mother, would have to do for her children to survive.
A large portion of the book takes place in villages around Tzroyluk's home community of Point Hope, or Tikiak, in Inupiaq. She says, as an Indigenous author, it's important for her to tell the stories of her ancestors.
Tikiak is the oldest continuously living settlement in America. And so many researchers, historians, explorers, quote-unquote explorers, have traveled to Point Hope and written about Point Hope, but from the non-Native perspective. Not all of them saw us as human beings.
Tzroyluk says she spent 2 years writing full-time on the book. A large chunk of that time was devoted solely to research. She says the story was inspired from firsthand accounts from tribal leaders and elders, as well as Tikiak's oral stories from recorded archives. In researching 19th century whaling, Tzroyluk explored archives of the Massachusetts towns of Nantucket and New Bedford, as well as ship logs and census records. And then she made an interesting discovery.
I discovered that there was a lot more people of color in the whaling industry than what we've been taught.
Tzroyluk says learning about African-American crewmen allowed her to explore time through another lens, beyond Indigenous and non-Indigenous perspectives.
It does offer a different nuance, a dynamic into your storytelling.
Tzroyluk says she's already started working on her second novel, also historical fiction, that takes place in 1950s Canada. It will focus on trauma around residential schools. She says she hopes it will bring more attention to crimes the Canadian government and various religious institutions committed against Indigenous peoples. While both books deal with some heavy topics, Tsroyluk says ultimately she wants to convey the strength of Indigenous nations and her ancestors.
It is about reclaiming our stories, how we view the universe, and our people's history, the land's history. I think not enough has been written of how healthy we were as a nation, as Indigenous peoples, before we were affected by sickness and epidemics and famine.
Lili Tsroyluk's book, Sivulik, Ancestor, is out now. She says she hopes to complete her second novel by the end of next year. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.
And hi, I'm Becky, and you're tuned in to Raven Radio on day two of our pledge drive. We have a match on the table from Columbus of Between the Buttons, still there for you. Keep the momentum going by giving as well to us at kcaw.org or clicking or calling with your support at 907-747-5877. I'm here with Ellen.
Yes, thanks, Becky. Our goal is big. It's 100,000.